The King and Queen of Belgium are in Democratic Republic of Congo. Diplomats say it's a chance for reconciliation. But given the scale of atrocities committed under Belgian colonial rule, how much progress can be made? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Kim Vanel. A legacy of Belgian colonialism in Central Africa. In the course of two centuries, millions of people are believed to have been killed or mutilated in what's now modern-day Democratic Republic of Congo. The arrival of Belgium's royal couple on their first visit to the country is being billed as a way to move forward. But with such a long list of historical grievances, many Congolese are sceptical any real action or accountability can be achieved.
I wish that the president takes care of what is important to the Congolese instead of making useless expenses by inviting this royal couple. We have important things to settle here, like free education. Teachers are not well paid. But the president prefers to invite the Belgian king. To do what? To loot us again?
Yes, I am happy with the arrival of the Belgian king, because he is going to come and see where they have left us, if the Congo has evolved or gone backwards. It is like a mother who abandoned her children for years, and she comes back to check how the children are living. So let him come. But we don't know what he is going to bring us. If it is to destroy us even more, we don't know.
Belgium is well aware of its history in what was then the Belgian Congo. In 2002, Brussels formally apologized for its role in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. The Congolese leader served as the first prime minister after independence and was an important politician until his assassination in 1961. Belgium is expected to return Lumumba's tooth to his family, stolen by a Belgian police officer who confessed to participating in the assassination. The atrocities, which included forced labor, torture, amputations and rape, began in 1885 under King Leopold II. About 10 million Congolese died. The king's brutal rule was deemed so cruel that 23 years later, he was forced to relinquish control to Belgium's parliament. But the Congolese were still unable to own land, vote or travel freely. Before declaring independence in 1960, Democratic Republic of Congo had become Africa's richest colony, producing about 70% of the world's industrial diamonds. Most of the profits, however, went to Belgium. Brussels has acknowledged some of the abuses carried out during its 75-year rule, but many argue its public apologies have fallen short. Let's bring in our guests. In London, Jonathan Ofe-Ansa, publisher of Africa Briefing, that's a Pan-African news magazine. In Brussels, Theodore Treffon, a researcher at the Royal Museum for Central Africa and author of the book Congo Masquerade. Also in London, Phil Clark, professor of international politics at SOAS University of London. A very warm welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us here on Inside Story. I'd like to begin with you, Phil Clark, if I may, returning the tooth of the first Congolese prime minister. I mean, the whole thing just speaks to the brutality of Belgian rule, I guess, colonialism at that time. What does its return mean? What does it signify?
I think the return of Lumumba's tooth really is a reminder of just how much Belgium, and particularly the Belgian monarchy, the Belgian leadership, stole from Congo, including the physical remains of someone as politically important as Patrice Lumumba. It's a reminder that this wasn't just about the massive theft of physical goods, the looting of Congo's wealth. It was also the theft of human lives. And of course, this is also a reminder of the importance of Lumumba in Congolese history, a sense of what was lost, this great missed opportunity in Congolese politics, this revolutionary leader who was assassinated with the complicity of the Belgian regime. Mm. So the return of his tooth is enormously politically relevant and something that has resonated down through the decades.
I'd like to pass over to Jonathan Ofe-Ansa. What's your take on the significance of this, and talk to me a little bit more, if you can, about your sort of thoughts on Patrice Lumumba, why he was seen as such a threat by the West.
Yes, to me, the return of the tomb is merely symbolic. Okay, I mean, without any substance whatsoever. Though, having said that, I would say it's a good initial move at maybe try to repair or make some amends for the egregious atrocities meted out during the reign of King Leopold II, who, I mean, used Congo as his personal fiefdom, right? And then Lumumba, look, in the immediate post-colonial period in Africa, I mean, we had Nkrumah in Ghana, we had the other radical leaders, whom the West saw as a threat. And don't forget that the Cold War was also running. The Cold War between the West and the Soviet Union was running. So each side was jostling for influence on the continent. And when it comes to Congo, I mean, that's what Congo Leopoldville, as it was known in those days, it had massive mineral resources, as we know today. Okay, so the worst fear was that, look, Lumumba was a radical, Lumumba was assertive, somebody who wanted to assert Congo's independence, not just political, but assert its economic independence, and they feared maybe that he will shift to the east. So what he had to do was to eliminate Lumumba. And Lumumba's loss, you know, I mean, it's massive. It wasn't a loss just to Congo, but the whole of Africa as well.
Mm. Theodore Trefon, there have been various statements and apologies to some extent by the Belgians over the years. Have any of them taken in the full extent of the atrocities that were committed? Have any of them taken full responsibility? Can that be done?
You know, there's a big difference between French and English about the word that you've used, which is apologies. And that's the big debate today. Is King Philip going to express once again his regrets, or is he going to express an apology? Because if he expresses an apology, that could result in Belgium having to make financial restitution to Congo. And that's something that we don't know what's going to happen yet. But the king's visit is certainly not unanimously welcomed either in Congo or in Belgium. And the right-wing party, the NVA in Belgium, is opposed to the king's visit to Congo now. And they're certainly opposed to making any apologies because that could have a financial implication for the Belgian taxpayer. Now, we have to realize that this visit is taking place in a very, very important context of Belgian politics and in Congolese politics at the same time. Now, there's a diplomatic convergence. It's a major accomplishment for President Tshisekedi. And as a reminder to your audience, Tshisekedi was not exactly elected president. He became president through deal-making with Kabila and other actors 3 years ago. And the same thing with King Philip now. There's a lot of divergence in Belgium about whether or not he should be traveling to Congo, and what's the whole nature of this big debate, which is restitution. There was a mask that was just unveiled in the history museum in Kinshasa that came from the Tavern Museum. And, you know, this thing about restitution is very, very much a way of clarifying Belgium's colonial past. And there's a lot of emotion and a lot of ideology. And we're seeing this not only in Belgium, but we're also seeing it in Congo itself, where Philip's visit is not universally welcomed.
Jonathan Ofe-Ansah, I'd like to come back to you as we talk about the colonial past, but what are the ongoing impacts of colonialism on Democratic Republic of Congo today? What is the legacy? How is it continuing to be felt?
It just continues to, we see, Congo, has not known even a decade of peace, since independence in 1960. Currently, we see what's going on in the eastern part of the country. You dig a bit deeper, you find that it's all about control of Congo's vast natural resources. Okay, and I believe that the actors in Congo today are mere proxies to some external forces who want to keep on controlling Congo's resources. So the impact, it's everlasting. It's if King Philip is sincere in his approach to Congo, he must go further. Appeal to galvanize other Western leaders and get to the root of the problem, just to make sure that there is peace within the whole country. The issue of Congo, it's always bloody. There's always one fight going on or the other. So that's what they need to do. Because what happened during the colonial times, even in the immediate post-independence period, is still resonating today. The effect is still there.
Phil Clark, Human Rights Watch has suggested that financial reparations from Belgium, which would essentially be paid by the Belgian taxpayer, would actually be balanced by the economic benefits that have been derived from colonialism, on which Belgium continues to thrive. How does Belgium continue to thrive economically from its exploitation of Democratic Republic of Congo? And how could Belgium take full responsibility? What could that look like?
You only have to walk the streets of Brussels to see the amount of wealth that Belgium derived from Congo from the end of from the colonial period onwards. We are talking about the systematic transfer of enormous wealth from one African economy to a European economy. And this has left the Congolese state really in a very impoverished position, really since the end of the colonial period. So there's no question that Belgium owes Congo an enormous reparations package. And there's a global picture here as well. We are also seeing Germany having to deal with the question of reparations to Namibia for the Herero genocide. The British government has had to pay reparations to the victims of Mau Mau atrocities in Kenya. This is what is spooking the Belgian government at the moment. They know that there is a zeitgeist around reparations. What Belgium is trying to do, to a certain extent, is do a more piecemeal response for atrocities in the past. They've had a commission of inquiry into atrocities committed right across Central Africa. There is the repatriation of masks and other artistic artifacts back to countries like the DRC. I think there's a hope on the part of the Belgian authorities that will be enough, that if we have this commission of inquiry and we send a few objects back to Congo, that will draw a line under history. That's not the view in Congo. That's not the view in the other Belgian colonies in the region, like Rwanda and Burundi. The view there is we want to see something more tangible. We want to see something much more systematic, much more material, much more financial. And it needs to be on a scale that is comparable to the wealth that Belgium stole from these countries in the first place. These kind of symbolic, these kind of cosmetic responses simply won't cut it.
Jonathan Ofeanza, I can see you shaking your head there. Was there something you wanted to add?
Yes, I agree. I absolutely agree 100% with what Mr. Foucault said. Yes, like I said earlier, this visit and the return of this artifacts to whatever, they're all symbolic. They need to go further. And we mentioned the word restitution. And Mr. Clark mentioned the reparations in Namibia from Germany as well and so forth. Yes, Belgium's economy virtually was built on the spoils of on the exploitation of the Congo. So if the king has deemed it right, expressed regrets, but falling short of apologizing, then they must go a step further and see how they can offer economic restitution to the country, because the country is bleeding.
Theodore Treffon, you said that after colonialism ended in DRC, it was about reconstituting the colonial space for Belgium and France. Can you kind of talk me through that?
Well, there were, first of all, I'd like to clarify, I'd like to follow up on what my predecessors just mentioned, and that is that we have to bear in mind that Belgium today is one of the countries in the world with a very, very high growth rate, very high savings rate, very high human development index. Congo, on the other hand, is usually pretty much on the bottom, at the bottom of the barrel. So there's a tremendous disparity there. This fact, however, needs to be nuanced by current dynamics in Congo's relations with other countries. Belgium is a very, very small commercial partner of the DRC today, compared to China, India, South Africa. Lots of other partners have really taken the place of Belgium in commercial exchanges. Congo is an important part of the Belgian psyche. Now, if Belgium's an important country, they associate that importance with the role that they had in this amazingly rich and culturally diverse country that many, many Belgians were familiar with, you know, everyone. So I'm American, I've lived in Belgium for many of years. I cannot go to any kind of event when I don't meet someone that said, oh yeah, well, my uncle was in Congo, my father was an administrator. And you know, there's a very, very deep social connection between Belgium and Congo. And this is so the beginning of the response to your question about recolonizing space, because after independence, there was a new scramble for territory in Africa. You know, we're really in the context of Cold War politics, where you had a really, really severe looming crisis between the East and the West. You know, it was the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, there was MPLA in Angola. You had a Marxist-Leninist regime across the river from Kinshasa in Congo-Brazzaville. So, you know, it was a new crucible of how politics were being redefined. And at the same time, Belgium badly needed to keep control primarily of the mining interests it had in Katanga. And this is why there was the Katanga succession, there was the assassination, or the mysterious murder of UN's General Secretary Dag Hammarskjöld. So, you know, there was a lot going on. And so Belgium did have a very, very dubious role here. Of course, they were more agents of the American CIA when it comes to Lumumba's assassination, when it came to the Katanga succession. So, you know, Belgium, I think, is very much an actor, but also very much a victim of the whole way that Cold War politics unfolded. And they probably didn't think that carefully enough. And this is why we're encountering so many problems now about how to deal with Belgium's colonial past, which is creating a lot of emotion and a lot of ideology in Belgium today. You know, we've had a number of statues of King Leopold removed from Belgian cities. There's a big debate now about renaming streets that were named after, let's say, pretty much horrible people that were responsible for all kinds of atrocities. So there's this debate, but then there's also quite a large segment of the Belgian population that feels misrepresented, because this lobby will say that, well, in 1960, at independence, the Belgian Congo had the same standard of living as Canada and South Africa in terms of hospital beds, in terms of primary education, in terms of... So the debate in Belgium itself is very, very stratified. Mm-hmm. And that former Belgian lobby of colonial administrators is still quite vocal. And they're probably saluting the visit of King.
Sure. I just want to pick up on something that you said, Theodore, and pass it over to Phil Clark. Belgium as a victim from from Cold War politics. I mean, I haven't heard that before. Is that something that is kind of discussed in academic circles when exploring the post-colonial legacy?
No, not typically, no. I mean, the way that Belgium tends to be talked about in these debates is firstly in terms of its colonial legacy. So that precedes any of these Cold War dynamics that Theodore is talking about, that's where the exploitation begins. That's where the pillaging of Congolese wealth begins. But then what we see is Belgium continuing to meddle in Congolese politics even after the end of colonialism. And I travel to Congo regularly. I was just there 18 months ago. And the perspective amongst many Congolese is that Belgian influence, negative influence in the country, continues right up until the present in terms of very opaque deals with mining companies, meddling in political affairs, the mistreatment of the Congolese diaspora living in Belgium today. So really what we're talking about is a story of fraught, unequal relations between Belgium and Congo from the colonial period through the Cold War all the way up until the present.
Mm. Jonathan Ofe-Ansah, when we talk about reparations and sort of reckoning with colonial pasts beyond DRC, we've been talking, or we mentioned the German government apologising for the genocide in Namibia. How does Belgium compare to other former colonizing powers in its attempts to apologize, to make reparations, to grapple with its quite violent past?
I can't give any concrete examples, but I know. Let me use the atrocities meted out to the Mau Mau, you know, fighters in Kenya. And a year or two ago, some of their descendants and some of the surviving victims, you know, sued the British government, you know, in the High Court here and won. So even if the British, you know, didn't directly apologize for the atrocities meted out to the Mau Mau, at least their court, their judiciary, you know, has actually declared them guilty. Okay. So you do not have to directly maybe apologize, but there are other means. You know, apology will be okay. Yeah, but if you do apologize, you need to follow it up, right? That is, it will be, you know, an open admission of guilt. So you follow that up with some sort of recompense, restitution, compensation, you know, yeah, that kind of thing. So that's the way I see it, that it should be.
Mm. Theodore Treffon, we're nearing the end of the program. We've got a minute or so left, but I just want to ask you, is there a shift in the way that former colonial powers are approaching this reckoning with their past, or approaching how to take responsibility, to take accountability?
That's an important question, but I would first like to clarify that everything about this debate about Belgian relations with Congo, when you know approximately 50% of the Congolese population is 16 or 17 years old or younger, so the vast majority of Congolese are very, very far removed from these high-level political discussions about diplomatic restitution and apologies or regrets. You know, these are people that live in the fend-for-yourself economy. They live from hand to mouth on a day-to-day basis, and they're probably really not that very concerned about what King Philip is going to say in Parliament. These are people that are struggling to feed themselves, to feed their families, and it's true that Congo has been victimized over many, many years, but this is not an excuse for a really weakness in the whole panoply of development initiatives that is both organized and orchestrated by Congo's international partners and by cleavages within the Congolese elite themselves that are very, very very, very clever at keeping society very stratified. So to place blame strictly on one actor, I think would be really doing a disservice to the debate. It's a shared responsibility of failure.
Thank you very much to all of our guests, Jonathan Offer-Anser, Theodore Treffon and Phil Clark. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Kim Vanel, and the whole team here in Doha, bye-bye for now.